Hi, my name is Sapan Guy. I am Chief Commercial Officer of AIM and ASX-listed Sovereign Metals. Sovereign Metals is developing the Kasia-Rutile graphite project in Malawi alongside our strategic partner, Rio Tinto. Kasia should put us in a market leader position in both the rutile and graphite markets as the world's largest and lowest cost producer of both these critical materials.
Sapan, good to see you. Good to see you. What I want to talk to you about today is obviously there's a release has come out, which is great. I'm trying to understand though, how do you move from a big deposit into commercial reality? So, I mean, just start off with this this news around the test work around the graphite, please.
We released the fact that we have now done some flotation work on the graphite. Let's take a step back and think about what Kasia is and how that becomes the producer of a commercial product. So Kasia, world's largest rutile deposit, but also the world's largest graphite deposit, the world's second largest graphite deposit. Graphite, we look at it as a byproduct of mining the rutile, but in essence, if you look at our pre-feasibility study that came out last year, it's about 50% of our revenue, so it's a significant byproduct. Most graphite these days now does end up in the battery space. It's basically used to produce the anode to your lithium-ion battery that ends up in your electric vehicle or in other power solutions. So that process of taking graphite from in the ground to it ending up in your Tesla is a long, arduous process of ensuring that once it's in the Tesla, it actually works the way it's meant to work. We, as you know, a bunch of geologists, engineers, ex-bankers like myself, we're not completely, or we weren't about 2 years ago, completely au fait with how that process actually comes about, that whole qualification of the graphite material. But where we've got to in the last few months, and specifically since Rio Tinto have come on board and we've brought in essentially an A team around an A team, a world-class deposit, is we recently hired a metallurgist by the name of Surinder Garg. He's done a whole bunch of strategic initiatives, test work, planning, studies around how does the graphite in ore end up in a battery and what does it do once it's in the battery. So we now have that essentially IP on board with Sovereign Metals. So we are working with Surinder in developing our own strategy around commercializing our graphite for the battery space.
Right. Okay. But bunch of comforting words and phrases in there. But let's come back to that word reality. Okay. So you've done this test work. It's got lower impurities. It's superior quality is a phrase you use. Higher grade is another way of looking at it. And by that, I assume higher margin as well. But because it's very technical, what do you have to do when you take it out of the ground? We'll maybe talk about the mining component another day, but when it comes out of the ground, what is this process that you guys have defined, and where does the kind of the value and the margin get created?
Those who aren't completely familiar with mining, with specifically graphite plays and the way they basically should be mined, we'll look at our deposit. Look at we've got like 1.4% grade in the ground and say, okay, that's pretty low compared to some of these, 4, 5, 6, 7% deposits. But the reality is the graphite is a byproduct. We're not mining this solely for the graphite. Whereas I'd say pretty much all other graphite deposits in the world are mined primarily for the graphite. We're mining this for the rutile. So that grade is irrelevant to us. The grade that's relevant to us is once we've taken out the rutile, what's the grade within that essentially gang material following to having taken out the rutile, the heavy minerals. And that's more like 3-4%. And what that test work that we've just published out to market shows is that 3.5-4% material you put into what's known as a flotation cell, essentially. Which starts to separate out the graphite from everything else, from all the other middlings. And you'll quickly find that we go from that 1.4% in the ground to 3.5% post taking the rutile out, through to 55% very quickly. And that's your first step in cleaning out a graphite product. By the time you've gone through the other steps, we've got like a 97% plus graphite product. That's quite important because the higher your total graphitic content, that TGC, or your graphite grade of your concentrate, the higher the price you can get in the markets. And today it's about $50 a ton more for every percentage increase. Showing that we can get 97% is great because in the PFS we modeled out around 96%. And if you look at our PFS results, you'll see that within the sensitivities themselves, we showed that every percentage increase in the graphite price basically becomes a percentage increase in our NPV.
Right. I got to come back to the question around margin. Okay, the percentage is great because you'll get more, but if it costs you more to do that, there's a kind of cutoff point where you say, well, actually, optimum looks like this. I mean, in terms of that type of test work, where you kind of work it on a commercial scale, what you're aiming for in terms of percentage versus what you're prepared to, you know, spend on energy or another cost. When does that work get done?
So everyone loves to talk about grade because grade is a lovely proxy for cost. You know, the higher the grade, the lower your costs, usually. In this scenario, because it's a byproduct, that grade really doesn't matter. What does it look like in the ground? The grade that matters is what does it look like once we've processed it for the rutile. And if you look at it from that perspective, we would be the lowest cost producer of flake graphite concentrate in the world, bar none. We're talking about a spectrum of anywhere between kind of top $300, $400 a ton to about, you know, $1,500 a ton for our peers. We'll be producing graphite at $182 a ton. So even at today's prices, at the lower end for your finest materials, and you're getting $450-$500 a ton, and people would be making a loss, we'd be making a multiple margin.
Okay. And what's the PEA, remind people, what's the PEA suggest that you can extract?
In terms of volume, we'd be looking at... in terms of volume, we'd be producing about 240,000 tons of graphite. That would make us the largest producer of graphite outside of China as well. I say outside of China because we haven't actually figured out, you know, where most of this graphite outside of China comes from. Importantly, though, having spoken about China, is within that release, we also talked about impurities a bit. And one of the key things that we found is most graphite that ends up in batteries comes from China. Chinese graphite is very low in sulfur. The only player that we know within the graphite space outside of China that has very low sulfur like us is ourselves. That's it. So we're in quite an interesting position, and that's all to do with the weathering of the material. I think you'll find that most other graphite players will be mining essentially hard rock or primary rock, as we call it. Our material's all weathered already. You know, Mother Nature has done that kind of crushing and grinding for us, so we're not doing any of that. Which then obviously feeds into why we're so low cost in our production of graphite.
Okay, so 0.02% sulfur means you don't have to spend money trying to extract it, or someone doesn't have to spend money trying to extract it. So that's, again, with the margin, very, very good. Okay, so you talk about trying to identify the kind of ex-China component and what the market supply is. What's the demand look like? Can you sell 240,000 ton of product into market ex-China?
So two things. Number one, yes, there's the market's about 3 million tons. Most of it is from synthetic. Now, if you look at the synthetic value chain, right? So synthetic graphite basically is most of the graphite that ends up in a battery. And no one, I think, in their right mind would think that natural graphite is absolutely going to replace the synthetic. But there's a right blend to be had between the two. But synthetic graphite is essentially that's a byproduct of the petrochemicals industry. So your EV is reliant upon the petrochemicals industry for the battery to work currently. So there's got to be a bit of give somewhere there, right? That whole paradox cannot last. We can't save the planet by producing more material and byproducts out of petrochemicals.
I like that. I like that a lot.
So we know that there'll be some replacement of the synthetics, just because, you know, the points that I just made. But obviously the market's increasing. And, you know, people do say, well, I don't think the shift to electric vehicles is going to be as fast as the policymakers and the regulators want. Yes, but we're still that market's still growing. It's one of those things, you know, when you used to look at the growth rates in China and they dropped from like 14% down to 9%. And it's like, yeah, fine. You know, it's a big drop, but 9% on what versus 14% on what? And you find out that actually the volumes of electric vehicles are still you know, being produced are still quite vast at the moment.
Okay, so your interest suggests that you've got something good. We've talked about the game of margin there. You're still going to need buyers for this thing. So you talked, I think, earlier, within the last week or so, about increasing the bulk sample capability. How many people, how many groups, how many companies are testing your product at the moment? And again, what's that going to path through to revenue?
Yeah, so graphite qualification is one of the biggest hurdles I think any graphite explorer, developer, producer is going to come across. We've put a whole strategy in place where our graphite has been tested at the lab level. It's being tested in terms of what does it look like when it works in a battery and what does that whole electrochemistry set look like. And we should be hopefully putting that news out to market very soon. If you're a battery anode producer or a battery producer, you know, whether you're in the US or you're in, you know, South Korea or Japan, and you're looking to produce this stuff that usually you get the Chinese to produce on your behalf. One of the key things is, and this harks back to why graphite is considered a critical mineral, is, you know, that security of supply. So the easiest way to secure supply is to ensure that you have, you know, the largest producer of a specific material, input material for yourself, as part of your supply chain. So the fact that we'd be the largest and lowest cost puts us at the lowest risk end of inserting ourselves within to that supply chain. All we're doing now is showing that our graphite works in a specific way so the battery makers can fix their chemistry set for our graphite, and ensuring that we can show the world that we can continually produce this graphite, you know, with the new spiral concentrates coming on site, with some of the work we're doing on the ground, we're going to show that we can continuously just process this material for both rutile and graphite.
Right. Okay. And like Rick, who's this year announced that, you know, he is invested in your company. He likes this thing because of the scale, and obviously the economics of this thing. But you're going to have competition at some point, right? There's going to inevitably, as the space heats up, there's going to be competition. What are the things working in your favor? You're clearly significantly advanced. Will that first mover advantage, as it were, be a problem for others coming through?
If you look at the graphite space specifically, and we could talk about rutile separately, but in the graphite space, I mean, we're talking about production of about 2 million tons from those who have done studies in the past 4 or 5 years on their own graphite deposits. Given where the market's going, like I said, we're still going to need that synthetic material. We're still going to need China to be producing enough natural graphite to be taken up. So all we're saying is we're going to be a big fish in a much bigger pond. So there's more than enough space for us.
Right. Okay. Well, look, I'll leave it there on the sort of drill down, as it were, on the graphite. But I just think it's quite exciting. You're talking about it as a byproduct, but it's 50% of revenue. Is that right? Did you say 50% of revenue? Or
yeah.
So and what's it in terms of, again, margin? I'm about making money. I like companies that make money. So in terms of what's it as a percentage margin terms?
Yeah, look, in terms of margin, you drill down, our costs are so low for the graphite. $180 a ton for graphite. Well, actually, let's look at it from a per product. So whether you're producing rutile or graphite, it's going to cost us $400 a ton. For products that today sell anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000 a ton. So it's pretty healthy margins. I think our EBITDA margin in the PFS was around 67%. We'd be producing about $415 million of EBITDA for 25 years of initial mine life. I say initial because at the end of those 25 years, we'd still have 70% of the resource to go. So really, this thing is more of a annuity rather than a finite mine.
Right. Okay. And it's true. It's like I said, got scared. Talk to me about the retail there in terms of the where you are with that process in terms of accessing new markets. Well, markets at all actually for you guys.
Yeah. Look, the retail story is much easier. Simply put, we have Rio Tinto, who are the world's largest producer of titanium dioxide today out of their Madagascan operations, out of their operations in South Africa and in Quebec. With them helping us basically ascertain how to optimize Cassia, we're further understanding the whole rutile complex. Not just rutile itself, but titanium dioxide. I think where we're headed on that front is rutile's obviously very key for the titanium space, and titanium being a critical mineral. We're talking to all the right parties within that sphere, that world, kind of ex-China parties, I would say, in order to get our rutile up to commercial spec, which it already is. And remember, before Rio Tinto came on board, we had MOUs signed for offtake with US listed Chemours, with Mitsui out of Japan. These guys have tried and tested our rutile. They've even taken our ore and done work on getting the rutile out of the ore. They've come back with, yes, this is commercial grade stuff. And it was obviously part of the due diligence that Rio Tinto did as they came in as well.
Right, okay. And if I look at, obviously, Rio there as a 15% strategic holder, but a miner, completely miner. Does this preclude you guys from maybe trying to move downstream? As you build this thing up, you supply your product into market, Rio will help you and do that with the rutile, the graphite. You've obviously got a team on board who understand that well enough to get into a Tesla, etc. We've seen a lot of OEMs, battery manufacturers, kind of moving upstream and trying to get a hold of supply or secure of supply. But we've also seen a few moves by mining groups moving downstream, trying to be sort of technology providers, trying to be capture the margin downstream. How do you feel about venturing downstream?
I think Matt, we're going to stick to what we know best, and we're going to try and maximize shareholder value by undertaking day-to-day tasks that we know best to do. Moving downstream, moving into a world of tech and chemistry and all that fun stuff. It all sounds very sexy, but we've already got a tier one deposit that needs building out with a tier one team and a tier one strategic partner. We don't need to start worrying about looking too sexy on the downstream front. We're going to stick to our knitting on this one.
A sensible choice. Ryan, so in terms of this year, what are we looking out for? Because obviously lots of conversations, I suspect, with some interesting partners, interesting strategic partners, also MOUs, hopefully, with some of these groups testing your products. What are you going to signal to us?
Yeah, look, outside of that, there's a few other things that we're doing. We're still... despite being the largest resource, the largest rutile deposit ever found, we're still drilling. We drilled to the south and found the mineralization continues. We're drilling in the north, and we'll test whether it continues there or whether we've found some boundaries. Either way, this thing is we know it's massive. We're trying to figure out just how big it is, and you'll hear some news on that. On the test work, yes, you're right. We'll be putting out more news on that, and hopefully about off-takers, specifically in the graphite space. And then we are literally moving into that optimization phase of checking, you know, can we mine this continuously? What does it look like to actually mine on the ground in Malawi? What does the rehabilitation and the backfilling of this material look like? So we'll be working on some decisions on that, ensuring we are, you know, the PFS is optimized for everything from water usage, tailing storage, processing, all of that. We'll be fully optimizing that in view of having a readiness for a DFS by the end of the year.
Okay, and so something you said there with regards to the exploration, different boards, different companies have a different view of, you know, certainly with large projects, why continue to drill? What type of drilling are you going to be doing, given it's already a global scale asset? Why spend the money?
So if you think of Kasia as a polygon, it's open in all directions. So we don't know where this mineralization actually is going to end. If for some reason we find a very high-grade pocket of rutile or graphite, that may feed into how we configure our mining technique and our mining inventory, whether we start in the north and move south, whether we from a central point we start moving outwards. All these things, you know, the last thing we want to do is build a plant on an area that then turns out to be the highest grade area within our license zone. So we're making sure we know what's in the ground before we start kind of moving dirt.
Right. And say it's fairly homogenous. It's kind of more of the same. What does that drilling do for you? Does it drive the price you can get for this thing? Should it drive value? If it's homogenous,
I mean, look, it's not a conversation that I really want to get into, you know, in terms of what does it drive in the price. But at the very least, I hope that the bigger the size of this deposit, that's reflected within today's share price, right? And what that looks like. Currently, I think we're trading at something like 10% of our future NPV, or put it another way, about 4 months of our future EBITDA. So, given all the pieces that we've put in place, whether that's the team, the partner, the actual deposit itself, the country we're in, the commodities we're in, the other, you know, the off-takers that we will bring on board, you'd hope that all of that starts getting reflected in the price at some point as well.